but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I've still got power. A lot of my surrounding neighbors and friends are reporting that their power is out. High winds, storm. Lee Hacksaw Hamilton joining us from Southern California. How are you, my friend? What's new down there? You got a windy, cold day down in Sandog?
John, good evening up in the Pacific Northwest. Now, we have nice weather here, but we've had, you know, fires recently and heavy rain and the whole nine yards. So we're checking off all the boxes. It eventually gets to us, too.
San Diego State in the Pac-12, the New World Pac-12. J.D. Wicker, the athletic director at San Diego State, John David Wicker, very excited. Probably got out over his skis a little bit. He's talking at a fan appreciation event. He's talking about the media rights deal. He's talking about expansion. I believe he got his hand slapped a little bit by the Pac-12 Hacksaw. But what did you make of the AD at San Diego State wanting to share that with his constituents?
Well, they're trying to sell this. They're trying to resell the football program. At the end of the day, yeah, you can be excited, but those of us in the media that have covered this a long time, me, yourself, and others, the reality is this is not the Pac-12, not the Pac-12 that we knew, not the Pac-12 that dated back to 1915. It's not the same conference. They're trying really hard to put media deals together. At the end of the day, you don't have a lot of marquee heritage teams that are coming in the front door, aside from what Boise State has accomplished in football and maybe what San Diego State has become in basketball. But they're not truly national brands. Now, I do believe that adding Gonzaga as a basketball member allows them to sales pitch network TV that basketball could be special. I would hope they'd follow that up and add St. Mary's. At the end of the day, I just don't know where they're going to go get another football-playing school that's going to have any impact at all. And I've seen some of the stuff that you've written, and I've talked about it and written it on my website and my podcast down here. You know, I don't want to hear about Tulane. I don't want to hear about South Florida, not even Memphis, et cetera. What I think the Pac-12 leadership should do is go to the NCAA and ask for an additional year's waiver. Mm-hmm. Let us see what the next calendar year or two calendar years will be. Why do they have to be so steadfast that they need eight football schools immediately out of the gate? Get it established. Because I do think, my gut feel, John, is that Cal and Stanford will wake up one morning and be of the opinion this was not a good move to go to the ACC for very limited money in TV deals and inherit all this travel expense and have no relationship with any of those schools back there and maybe try to lure them to get an escape clause, get out of the ACC, come back here, and join the Beavers, join the Cougars, and then have four of the remaining Pac-12 teams here with the group that they've brought on board. That's what I'd like to see in the bigger picture. I don't know how doable that is, but again, I'm looking at this horizon here, and I can't be excited. John David Wicker has to be excited because that's his job. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is not what we had before, and I don't think it's going to show up in terms of media dollars with the next media contract. I've been told that this next media contract at most would give each school maybe $10 million. Well, $10 million pales in comparison to what, the $61 million that the SEC handed out or the $49 million that the Big Ten's handing out or whatever the Big 12 and the ACC are doing. $10 million is not a hell of a lot of money for, quote, big time. So there's just a real big issue here as to what this new thing's going to look like. I hope it works. I just don't have confidence. And the intangible thing that nobody's talking about, John, is a lot of the schools coming in the front door to help Oregon State, Washington State, they don't have NIL money to any big extreme level, and how are they going to raise that money? Because there's not a ton of massive tradition in a whole bunch of these programs. So that's a long answer to a short question, but they're trying hard to sell it. I just don't see it at this point in time.
I am looking at basketball. Tell us for a moment what San Diego State basketball has done. I look at the attendance. You know, that's a top 30 school nationally in basketball attendance and enthusiasm, obviously, an appearance in the national championship game. What has San Diego State basketball done in that region?
Enormously successful. What Steve Fisher did, what Brian Dutcher inherited, what they've continued on has just been fascinating. That being said, they're like everybody else. They're losing players to the Power Five conferences who walk in the front door waving a lot of dollar bills at their kids. It's becoming more of a challenge. You know, they have a 7-foot center from Sudan here who's really good. He's a redshirt freshman, really raw, has grown immensely. Now, he just got hurt over the weekend, and they don't know how bad this is going to be with a knee injury. But, you know, I told fans here, enjoy this, because I'm not so sure you're going to see Magoon Gwath here next year just because of what the landscape is like, where anybody can come in and take your top player, and it's happening a lot of places in the Mountain West Conference. So, but basketball has been special, unique kids, no trouble, no academic issues here, not a bunch of sluggos. It's really a really good product, but holding it together now becomes a bigger challenge because of the dollar game that's being played by every big-time school there is.
The Chargers still big-time in the market. Elijah Molden with a 3-year deal after breaking his leg. A lot of people here, fans of the Molden family, obviously. That's a kid who grew up rooting for the Chargers. Justin Herbert at the quarterback position. Jim Harbaugh. There's a lot of criticism for Herbert at the end of the season because of the way it ended. Where are you on Herbert and the Chargers, Hacksaw?
Well, you know, you're talking to the former voice of the San Diego Chargers. My gut feel is Justin Herbert, I hope he goes 17-0. Dean Spanos, the owner, I hope he goes 0-17. And that's really across the board the feeling of the people in San Diego towards the franchise that walked out in the middle of the night and turned their back on 55 years of loyalty. To go do that and then be on the periphery of attention in the L.A. market, where the only things that are important are Laker basketball and Dodger baseball. And then, obviously, what USC used to be, what UCLA might be occasionally. The Chargers are not really on anybody's radar. And by the way, the Rams are also in the market, and those guys have been to the Super Bowl twice since they came to Los Angeles. That being said, Harbaugh's arrival was welcome with open arms. I was told the league mandated the Chargers hire somebody with credibility after failing over so many years. Spanos' family, going into this past season, had 16 win-in seasons and 35 years of ownership. Harbaugh had them get to a good season. Herbert did a good job in a tough set of circumstances. He was really banged up, and his team let him down. When they got to the postseason, this was not on him. This was on his offensive line. This was on his wide receivers and tight ends. This was on the lack of the running game. This was on the lousy play calling by Greg Roman. It was not a Justin Herbert problem. Now, they got to get more players around that quarterback, but I'll tell you, I've been here a long time as a voice of the Chargers, and we went to the Super Bowl, and we had great quarterbacks. In the Bobby Bethard, Bobby Ross era, then obviously what Drew Brees became, what Phillip Rivers was, and now the arrival of Herbert. They still have never gotten back to a Super Bowl, and that Super Bowl was 30 years ago when the Chargers did it with kind of a patchwork team that had a one-off unbelievable season. So that being said, what's wrong with the Chargers has nothing to do with Justin Herbert. It's got everything to do with the organization. Harbaugh, obviously, great resume, Mr. Fix-It, change of the culture. General manager doesn't get any accolades at all, but Joe Hurtado comes from Baltimore. We all know what Ravens football has been. So I think you give them another year of the draft, they'll continue to add. They got a salary cap issue, though, because they may release Joey Bosa, and Khalil Mack may jump as an unsigned free agent. Now, if you lose those two cornerstone guys off your defense, now you're facing another hole there. But at the end of the day, this is not a Justin Herbert issue. I just think he's a stud. I think he's a winner. I think he's an intellect. They just got to do a better job, put more better people around him. And those people need to play at the most important time of the year and play well. You know, they played seven tough teams this year. They got punched in the mouth by all seven of them. The only people they beat were the dregs, the backup quarterbacks and the rookie quarterbacks and the Carolina Panthers of the world. So the record to me was a little bit misleading, but as you people know in the Pacific Northwest, that's a hell of a quarterback they have.
The Dodgers are deferring compensation. It's got a payroll that's crazy. The owners are complaining, Hacksaw, the rest of the owners, about the playing field being imbalanced. And is there anybody who can contend with the Dodgers in a season like this, at a time like this? Will the league make an adjustment to it? What do you make of what's happening in Los Angeles?
They're being painted as the evil empire, John. That's not the case. They're doing what they're doing is legal. What they're doing was agreed upon by the owners, agreed upon by the union in the last collective bargaining agreement. Teams have deferred contracts going all the way back to the New York Mets 20 years ago with Bobby Bonilla. Now, it's being done to an extraordinary level by the Dodgers, the number two market in the country. But that being said, the bigger issue in baseball is the disparity in payroll at the top versus what two-thirds of the teams at the bottom are refusing to do. Now, maybe they can't afford it. Maybe their owners are refusing to do it. We'll never see a salary cap. Tony Clark, who's a friend of mine, who's a union chief, who lives here in San Diego, we're never going to see a salary cap. But what we should have is a luxury tax with teeth. Just continue to work on that. And what we have to have is the floor to spending. And for your listeners in the Northwest, every other league has it. The NFL has it. Competitive balance. NBA, NHL has it. Now, some of those leagues have hard salary caps, but we're never going to get a hard salary cap in baseball. But if you mandated that the Miamis and the Oakland A's and the Pirates and all these smaller markets, they're taking revenue share and getting TV money, that money has to go back into major league player payroll, not into the owners' pockets. And if we got to a floor to spending, the second-tier free agent pitcher, who might be a good pitcher, he'd go to Pittsburgh, he'd go to Miami, he'd go to Tampa Bay, because they had to pay $120 million on the floor, and these teams right now are paying $47, $76 million payroll, well below everybody else. And if you get the second-tier free agent pitcher or designated hitter or third baseman goes to Pittsburgh or Tampa or Miami, suddenly that product's better. What you don't want, John, is you don't want five teams at the top in big markets with big revenue streams signing all the players, and the other 25 have to play out the schedule. You don't want this to become the NBA. And this is going to be hard to get from point A, where we are right now, to point B, with a floor to spending and a harder luxury tax. And to complicate it all is the loss of the TV revenue. I mean, what Rob Manfred has on his plate right now is really hard. ESPN walked away from the $550 million a year deal for the next three seasons. They've just terminated that contract. We got 11 to 13 teams have lost their regional sports network TV money because of the collapse of the Diamond Sports Group. Baseball would like to take it all under one umbrella, but I'll guarantee you the Yankees and the Mets and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and the Cubs, who have their own big networks, they're not giving up all that big money to pour it into a pot to help all the smaller guys. So Manfred's got his hands full with the creative financing of contracts. What I think they should do is the floor to spending, and then obviously how is he going to put this oil fire out with all the erosion of this TV money, because these clubs have signed contracts for 5 years, 10 years in some cases, counting on that TV money, and suddenly that TV money has kind of disappeared. That's an awful lot. I hope it didn't confuse you, but there's a lot of things on Rob Manfred's checklist that they got to solve, and the union's got to be part of this to help them, because they represent more than Juan Soto. They also represent the 25th man on every roster, and they need to see the bigger picture of having all these franchises be competitive so you have balance, because that's what's made the NFL work and why some of these other leagues are so competitive.
Lee, you grew up on Long Island, and I think you say it as one word, right? Long Island. You end up on the other side of the coast, play-by-play on the NFL. You know, Hacksaw and Hayworth from 6 to 9 in the mornings, Monday through Friday, San Diego's sports leader. Afternoon drive on Extra Sports 1360 in San Diego, Extra Sports 690, sports commentary. You're still at Lee, HacksawHamilton.com. How did the kid from Long Island end up so far from home doing what he loves?
Well, it's interesting. I grew up in a baseball family. My father was a pitcher in the Philadelphia Athletics organization. My uncle was a very famous sports writer in Brooklyn, then went off to World War II and became a very famous journalist for the wire service in the Pacific Theater. So I grew up in this environment. I've been doing this ever since I was a kid, and I went to university, majored in communications, and climbed the ladder from small market Appalachia to upstate New York, wound up in Cleveland, and wound up going to Phoenix from Cleveland. I was doing Major League Hockey, and then I was doing Pac-10, Pac-12 football with Arizona State, and then I came out here to be the voice of the Chargers, and I've stayed here forever. As you know, the landscape of our industry, communications industry, has drastically changed. Newspapers are not what newspapers used to be, with apologies to the Oregonian, and radio and television has drastically changed, and therefore some of us reinvent. So that's why I've gone from sports talk radio to doing sports anchor work on TV to doing a written website every day that'll knock your socks off in terms of information, plus my podcast. So I'm doing a lot of different things, but I've had this thing about information and covering things, and God, I've been able to do it since age 18, which was a few third downs ago. So yeah, that's how I wound up out here on the West Coast, and I've stayed in San Diego rather than kind of move around the country. But industry has changed. I've tried to change with it.
Yeah, and the market there has changed as well. And you had NBA at one point, and certainly the NFL now gone to Los Angeles, but Padres still move the needle there, right? I mean, are the Padres still the draw there?
Padres have become the draw. Padres have become cornerstones of the community. They've gone through a real bumpy time. Their lead owner, Peter Seidler, who poured enormous wealth into the franchise to get rid of the slogan that we were a small market America, he made it a big market, big spending team. They haven't gotten to the World Series. They've gotten close. But he's passed on, and now they're facing reality that they can't afford in the smaller market to have a $200+ million payroll. They're going to operate. They're going to start the season at $200 million, but that still puts them over the luxury tax level. But I mean, the product is good. They've spent volumes of money. They've drafted well. They've traded the farm system away three times. They've gotten all kinds of veterans here. They came close to beating the Dodgers last year. The window to do this to get to the World Series is really small because they've spent so much money on long-term contracts with veteran players, now contracts they can't trade. They got to get it done. Last year should have gotten done, didn't. This year, I don't know how they get it done because of what's gone up north with the Dodgers and just the unbelievable talent level they have and obviously the payroll that they're spending. But the window is probably got to be this year or next year to be a World Series team, because then you're going to have a bunch of 35-year-old guys as their stats start to go down on long-term contracts. They're going to take them to age 40 or 42. So, but they're big in the community, and last season was fabulous till they ran into a Dodger bullpen at the end of the season that choked them off. They were one game away from going to the National League Championship Series at the Dodgers at home. And a bullpen day, and I thought they're going to end this right now, and instead they wound up losing, and they wound up losing the second game, and they went 24 straight innings without scoring a run.
Yep. Against disappointed in that.
And it just choked them. It killed them. They've got to prove that was a one-off, that they can come back and be a player. But the problem is they're a player in this division, which is pretty doggone tough, led by the Dodgers. I call the start of the season the Dodger Invitational, because everybody's going to be chasing L.A., and I don't know who's going to catch him.
Hacksaw Hamilton, LeeHacksawHamilton.com in Southern California. Thank you for your time, my friend. Appreciate you.
My pleasure, John. We'll chat anytime. Always great to have you on board.
There he goes, Lee Hacksaw Hamilton. Some parting thoughts coming up. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.